Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, October 31st, 2010, Halloween. This is episode 714. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk tech. Computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all that great stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you want to call me with a question or a comment or a suggestion. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you can still call. Just use Skype out and give me a ring. 8888-ASK-LEO. Skype out. Just I guess you can't probably do the ASK-LEO thing. You just go plus 1-888-827-5536. So, gosh, there's so much to talk about. I think one thing I'd like to say right up front, we've got an election going on in the U.S. on Tuesday. And I especially want to talk to the geeks in our audience and encourage them to vote. I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but you vote your own conscience. But I think a lot of times we geeks feel somehow above the process or not of the process. I think it's part of being kind of a nerd, kind of somebody who was shunned in high school and kind of off doing the chess club or the AV squad or computers, that perhaps we feel like we're not part of the community. That the community has kind of ignored us and left us out. And so, well, the heck with them. I'm going to do my own thing. You know, there's a really good article, which I encourage anybody who's interested in this stuff to read in the New York Times today. A kind of a profile of Evan Williams, the guy who started Twitter. Interesting fellow. Grew up in Nebraska. He says, I think something like 50 miles from nowhere. And was a loner growing up. And he said, I did not rebel. My form of rebellion was to say, I'm going to do it myself. And I think that's very common among tech entrepreneurs, among us geeks in general, that we tend to be loners, we tend to be introverts, we tend to say, I'm going to do it, I'm going to go it myself. And so I think perhaps we're maybe a little less political than we ought to be, and yet there is absolutely an agenda that we geeks should ought to be paying attention to. And it starts with these elections, maybe even more than a national presidential election. It starts with these local elections because it all begins. It's all local. You know, it's the guy or gal you elect to the city council or the board of supervisors or the alderman. Those are the people who make the biggest difference in your life. And that's where it all starts. So I want to encourage everyone to get out there on Tuesday and vote your conscience. And even if you're a geek and you say, oh, I don't vote. I'm not participating in that. I don't want to have anything to do with that. I think you should get out there and look for those candidates who are technically savvy. Because, you know, we have a lot of people in Congress, in assemblies, in legislatures all over the country who know nothing about technology and propose crazy technological laws that are just appalling. For instance, President Obama is about to sign, without a vote, without talking to Congress, a copyright law called ACTA that anybody who's a geek should be just not only offended by, but terrified of. Congress has proposed all sorts of oddball internet censorship legislation, copy protection and so forth. That's because they hear from the big donors, the people in the music industry and the movie industry, who don't want us to have free, usable technology. They see the computer not as a tool to change the world, but as a piracy device. So they're getting heard in the halls of Congress. We got to get heard in the halls of Congress, too. And the only way to do that is to vote. And then after you vote, to write and write and write again. Not email, but write a letter. Write a postcard to your local authorities and say, hey, we care. We vote. I'm a geek and I vote. And you may say, well, I don't know. Is there somebody running in my neck of the woods that, well, find out. Go to their websites. If they have a good website, good start. If they have a great website with video on it and Facebook and Twitter and ways that you can interact with them in real terms, all the better. We've got a guy here. I live in a small town in Northern California, Petaluma, California, where there's a very hotly contested city council. And I looked carefully at all the candidates, and I found a candidate who's running for city council here in Petaluma, who has a great website, but he's a VP at a software company in town. I'm a big fan of their software, Bias Software. Jason Davies, he's running for city council. Now, you better believe I'm going to vote for him because this guy's technically literate. I know he understands the issues. I know he's going to act in my best interest. And I think it's very important that we all get out there and do that. So just a little cheerleading, especially aimed at the geeks, those of us who say, not for me. Yes, it is. Get involved. You can't complain if you don't vote. You can't rant and rave against ACTA or the FCC or any of this unless you vote. So get out there and do your civic duty on Tuesday. Even if it's just a few issues that you know about and you care about, get out there and vote for them. Find out as much as you can. I'll tell you, nowadays, thanks to the net, it's all out there. You can find out who contributed to whose campaign, where the money is flowing. That'll tell you a lot about a candidate. And look at what their technology point of view is. I think that's really important. Publius in our chat room says, it's people who vote who are to blame for the mess we're in. What? Well, you better go vote then, Publius. You think not voting is helping us dig out? Mm-mm. There's not much logic in that, my friend. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. One of the things I did want to talk, so we'll move on, but I wanted to just promote that. One of the things that I said I would talk about this week, and I will, is Google TV. Google TV. Have you tried it yet? I did. You know, this is, we talked a lot in the last 6 months about the fact that the internet is coming to your TV set. And how do you do it? Do you do it by hooking up a Roku box? Do you do it by buying a TV set with an Ethernet jack in it? Do you do it by Apple TV? Well, Google wants to get into this, absolutely wants to get into this act. And Google has created something they call Google TV. They announced it a few months ago at their big Google I.O. conference, and now we're starting to see the first devices. Sony made a Google TV TV set. They have a Blu-ray player. And I bought the Logitech Review, which is the standalone Google TV device that Logitech's offering for $299. Finally came this week. And I have to say, I'm not going to recommend it. Not yet, anyway. The idea of Google TV is that you get TV from a lot of sources, from your cable box or satellite box, from your DVR if you're recording stuff, from the internet if you have an internet connection. And, of course, with Google TV, that's part of the point of it, is it does connect you up to the internet. It sits in between your cable or satellite box and your television, has an internet connection in it, comes with the Logitech one, comes with a keyboard. You got a full keyboard and mouse. But what kind of interestingly, you can also use your Android-based phone as a remote, and that's kind of nice. It actually works pretty well. Takes a little while to set up. You hook it all up, and then you've got to go through a setup. The first thing you do is you get online, and then you down in Wi-Fi or direct Ethernet connection. Then you download an update, and that takes a while. And then you've got to say, I live in this zip code. This is who I get my television from, because they have to know your cable guide and all of that. Now, you can Google search for a TV show. You can type in Mad Men, and it'll say, well, here's how you could watch Mad Men. You could watch it on channel 710. You could watch it on channel 52 if you don't want the high-def version. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Amazon. And it tells you all the different places. It actually doesn't mention iTunes because iTunes is not compatible. And the networks have decided to block Google TV. So even you can't get websites from ABC, NBC, or CBS. You have to have cable or satellite. Hulu Plus doesn't work. They're blocking it too. It's just a mess. It's overly complicated. It is not easy to set up. Once you set it up, it gets in the way, to be honest with you. You'll eventually just say, why am I just not using the cable guide? It is not a good solution. If you want to hook up your television to the internet, my strong suggestion is get a Roku box. It's $99, not $299. It allows you to get content from a lot of places, including Amazon, including this show, by the way. You can watch the show live on your big screen TV through a Roku box. It also supports Netflix, of course. And unlike Google TV, it has a more modern Netflix interface. Google TV has the old-fashioned Netflix interface. Apple TV and Roku have allow you to add movies from the interface. On the Google TV, you have to go back to the web. Things like that. So I'm sorry. It's just not ready yet. I had high hopes for it. I really thought that this might be a breakthrough for internet television. It isn't. And in fact, I'm a little worried because I think people will buy this and throw up their hands and say, well, I guess internet and TV don't mix, and walk away. I think there are easier, better solutions to give you more content in a much more streamlined way. So if you're looking for that this holiday season, maybe as a gift, Roku is a great choice. I do have the MacBook Air in my hot little hands, the 11-inch, and I have to say, very nice. I'll give you a quick review of that. It's great. It's light. It's surprisingly fast. And we talked about this yesterday on the show. It turns out the CPUs, the microprocessors in any computer these days, well, maybe not the Atom-based, but any, you know, Core 2 or above processor is plenty fast to do most of the things you do. Where we really slow down is the hard drives. And the fact that the Apple's put a solid-state drive in this, a flash memory-based drive that's very fast, makes this thing feel very snappy. It boots up in 15 seconds. You launch programs, Apple people will understand this, in one bounce, less than a second to click a program and have it running. It's a really nice little computer. So I have to say I'm impressed. Yes, it's expensive, as is all Apple hardware, at $999 starting point. But Apple decided they didn't want to make a cheap netbook. They said, we're gonna make something that feels a little nicer. And this is Apple's way, isn't it? They're kind of like the BMW computers. You pay a premium for the status symbol, for the little bit of nicer fit and finish, that kind of thing. All right, enough of me gassing. Let's take some calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. That's the number if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. If you'd like to talk tech with me, I'm here to do it with you. Let's go to Nova Scotia, up in Canada. Justin's on the line. Hi, Justin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey there. How's it going?
It's great. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Do Canadians celebrate Halloween, or is that just an American thing?
Yes, the Canadians celebrate Halloween.
I apologize for my ignorance. Actually, I knew this because when I did the show in Toronto for 4 years, every Halloween we'd put on costumes. So I guess I knew that.
Yeah, well.
But you guys celebrate it. See, you celebrate Thanksgiving in October. So, you know, I think maybe they celebrate Halloween in December. I don't know when they I'm just teasing you. What can I do for you, Justin?
First off, I just wanted to say it's probably better with the Halloween thing than the time you said that we have 6 more months of winter in April.
I just, you know, I live in California. I don't understand all this this white stuff coming from the sky that if it is frozen and then you slip around. I don't get that.
No, you don't get it.
I'm just teasing you.
Anyway, I was a Linux user until about 3 days ago. It started giving me trouble with my iPod. And of course, with Linux, there's always a few little things that don't work. So I finally said, you know what? There's no reason. I went back.
Now, let's say this. I want to say this up front. You can't blame Linux for not working with an iPod. You can blame Apple for not supporting Linux, but you can't blame Linux for not working with an iPod. Now, of course, bottom line is, You as a user, as any reasonable user would, you want it to work with your stuff. But let's not forget whose fault that is.
There were other reasons for me.
Yeah. Which one were you using?
Ubuntu Linux, the latest version. Yeah. 10.
All right. If you're going to talk Linux, that's the one to use. It. For those who are saying, what is Linux? Well, you know, you've got Windows, you've got OS 10, Macintosh. There's another operating system. Actually, there are many other operating systems that you could use, but... A very popular one is called Linux. It's free. It's open source. That means people can write their own versions. They can look at the source code and modify it. It's not owned by anyone. And there are many different what we call distributions of Linux, but the best for most people is Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, and it's free, and you can get it from ubuntu.com, and it runs on netbooks, and it runs on desktops, and truthfully, most of the internet is running on Linux. A great portion of the internet is running on Linux anyway. But maybe not for the desktop. In fact, I see the desktop percentage seems to be shrinking. Most people have given up on it like you.
Anyway, whatever. Used it, loved it for 6 months, then it stopped working the way I wanted it to, went back to Windows 7. Okay. Now that I'm back to Windows 7, what my question for you is, how can I, because I want to make it as secure as I possibly can. Like, I'm paranoid. I just want it locked down as tightly as possible.
That's a very good call. A good question. How do you secure Windows? I mean, there. First of all, understand there's no such thing as a secure operating system, period.
Yeah.
Some are more secure. Because they're inherently more secure. I'd put Linux in that category. It's designed from the ground up to be a multi-user operating system with real security, et cetera, et cetera. But it benefits, as does Apple's OS X, from obscurity as well. I mean, fewer than 1% of all computers run Linux. So from the hacker point of view, attacking Linux on the desktop is not a you know, high payoff occupation. If you're a bad guy and you want to take over computers and you want to take over as many computers as rapidly as possible, there's just one choice. It's obvious. The Windows. It's 95% of the world. Why even bother with OS X or Linux? And they're a little more difficult to hack. And, it's just Linux users are much more sophisticated in general than Windows or Mac users. So they're going to be a little more suspicious. They're not going to fall for the pop-up that says, I'm Antivirus 2009 and you've got spyware. It just doesn't work with Linux people. Works great with Windows people, so that's who you write for. So what are the rules to protect yourself on any operating system? Again, there is no such thing as a 100% secure system. It's just not. It can't be done. You know, rule number one is to keep people's mitts off your physical system. A hacker can do so much more damage to you if he or she can touch the keyboard or the mouse, can get access. It's easy, for instance, on a desktop to put in between your keyboard and your computer a little tiny dongle you'd barely notice that would capture all your keystrokes and send it to the hacker. And if the person has physical access, there's so many things they can do. And then you want to keep virtual access away too. You don't want them to be able to reach through the internet into your computer, so you want to have a router. That's very important. Even if you're not sharing your internet, a router is a great firewall. It may not say so in the box, but it's a dumb box between you and the outside world. All the attacks hit the router, not your computer. The router ignores them because it doesn't know what to do. Of course, with every operating system, the most important thing is to apply updates as soon as they are available. On Windows, that means every second Tuesday of the month, just turn on the automatic updates on Windows and apply all critical updates ASAP. But now, because hackers know that you're doing that, more and more people are updating Windows. There are fewer out-of-date Windows systems. They're starting to attack third-party software. We're starting to see more and more attacks against things like Adobe Flash, Adobe Reader. So you want to make sure all your software is up to date. That's a little harder to do. There are, you know, kind of automated programs that will tell you if you're up to date. It's a good idea just to keep everything up to date. Make sure you don't accept files from strangers. That means file sharing like LimeWire, bad idea. Be very careful about clicking OK when you see a pop-up on your screen, and don't accept downloads from strangers in any form, especially if they say, we could fix your system. Email attachments are out as well. If you can do those things, I think you're going to be all right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my friends at Citrix. makers of Go to My PC. Access your computer remotely from anywhere you can get online. It's secure, it's fast, it's easy. It's Go to My PC. Try it free for 45 days and get half off when you use my name, Leo. Just go to gotomypc.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is the home theater guru. We're trying to get his video up. I see just a black screen, Scott. There you go.
Here I come. Hang on a second.
Because I want to see Scott, because I think because it's Halloween today, I've been a bad, bad man.
You're not wearing a costume.
I did not wear a costume. But Scott, my God, you've got a hat that's... Now, you do know, Scott, that this is radio.
Yes, I do know, but we've got a few people watching on live.twit.tv.
We do.
So I thought, you know, what the heck? I might as well wear my wizard suit.
My grandmother made.
There I am.
Grandma made that?
Well, she didn't make the hat. The hat's from Disneyland.
Okay.
This is the.
Well, stand up and let's see the rest of the hat has Mickey Mouse ears, so I should have known that are blinking. Wow, that's gorgeous. He's got shooting stars and moons. Do you have a wizard's staff as well?
I do. I don't have it with me, unfortunately.
Can you play it like a trombone?
No, but that's a good idea.
Yeah. He's the king of...
Come here.
King of wind instruments.
My wife is wearing her skeleton outfit.
Oh, let's see. I'd love to see that. Now, of course, this is radio, so I'll just try to describe this.
Okay, here's my staff right
here. He looks
here.
Like... The chat room is saying you look like Gandalf's goofy brother. Oh, my goodness gracious. How terrifying. So you just, so let me understand this. You just get dressed up and you...
Ways. Hello, everybody.
Hey, you get dressed up and hang around the house, Scott? Is that your idea?
No, my wife actually does like to get to put on her skeleton outfit for Halloween, just for grins and for her students. She's a voice teacher.
Oh, that's good. All right.
So she does that anyway.
How
so
cute.
I wanted to dress up a little for Halloween. Happy Halloween to everybody.
Scott Wilkinson is the editor, believe it or not, is the very highly regarded editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com, a columnist at Home Theater Magazine. He does a great podcast. I should really plug it more often when you're on because it's such a good show. I watch it every Monday.
Man. Last week was fantastic. It was Jeremy Kipnis, owner of the world's most expensive home theater.
He's known for that.
Yeah, he's in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Literally. How much?
$6 million.
Okay, he wins. Holy,
it's astonishing. It's astonishing. So you really should check that out.
That's more than most like theaters.
Yeah, exactly. It's more than most.
You could build a multiplex for that.
But it's astonishing. Oh. It's really amazing.
Well, I like it because it's what if price were no object, what would you buy? What is his projector, just out of curiosity? Does he use a Runco?
He's got two. He's got the Sony. He's got two. One of them is a digital cinema projector, the Sony 4K. And he's got another 4K from Meridian, which is about $180,000 by itself.
I didn't know they made 4K projectors. That's double the resolution.
Quadruple.
Horizontally and double vertically
of HD.
So it's
double vertically.
Correct. Four times the pixels. But is there any 4K content he can watch on this system?
Not much yet.
But he's ready.
Most studios do, in fact, master or archive in 4K. Most films are still filmed on film, so to speak, and then they digitize them. And typically these days they're digitizing at 4K.
Mm.
And then they down convert that to 1080p for Blu-ray. Or 2K,
so is film more than 4K resolution? Is it?
Well, that's a very good question. It depends on. There's some debate about exactly how can you.
It's not pixels, so it's not.
It's
comparable.
Not pixels. No, the resolution in a way is, you know, the film grain.
Right.
You know, and the film grain is very, very tiny. But then there's the question of how much resolution can the human eye see? Which is there, you know, there are certain ways to determine that. And it depends in part on how close you're sitting to the screen and so on. But
is there a rule of thumb, a number?
I think it's like 1/10 of a degree of arc, something like that. I haven't looked at it lately. I'd have to go back and
we
look
have
at
an
that.
Eye doctor, eye doc Mark in our chat room. I'll have
well,
to
then
ask
he probably
him.
Will know.
He'll know. He'll know the optical.
He'll know what.
But,
what,
but it's
what
hard to convert that to pixels.
It is. It is. Because it depends on how far away you're sitting.
Right.
You know, even a 4K display, if you're right up against the screen, you can see those pixels. But you have to be really, really close to the screen.
You might need
to see
a magnifying glass on that one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. So yeah. If you want to hear his podcast, the best thing to do is go to our Twit website, which is twit.tv.
Yep.
And his page, there's a link on the front page, but his page is HTG for Home Theater Geeks. So it's twit.tv/HTG if you want to go directly there.
And, right. Tomorrow, my guest is a guy named Chris Huston, who's an acoustical engineer and a recording engineer and producer who grew up in Liverpool, went to art school with John Lennon.
Wow.
And in fact, his band, The Undertakers, played in Liverpool and the Beatles opened for them.
Yeah, I bet he goes to bars and tells people that and they go, yeah, sure.
No, but in this case, it's really true. And he's got a bunch of amazing stories. So, he's going to be doing the podcast from the Sound Kitchen in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, a legendary studio.
So we're going to see some pictures and some video from the Sound Kitchen, which I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, that's really neat.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing I wanted to really mention really quickly. If you go to my website, you're going to like this. If you go to my website, ultimateavmag.com, and on the homepage, scroll down a couple of stories, you're going to see our first poll or vote. And the vote question is modern 3D a leap forward or merely hype?
Ooh.
I know you've got a strong opinion about this.
Yeah.
So I want you to vote.
Now, it's interesting because I had a guy in here yesterday who runs a skateboard company, Deluxe Skateboards, and makes skateboard video. And he is making 3D videos now. And, you know, I think that's an application that I bet you is a pretty good one. That I don't know how many avid skaters have 3D TVs, but if they do, I can bet they would want a 3D skateboard video.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
There could be a very good...
These are kind of little markets, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So on our vote, anybody can vote. All you have to do is click on one of those selections, which is, do you think it's a leap or a hype? Maybe it's both a leap and a hype, or 3D's already over.
Wow.
And then click the vote button. And when you do, you'll see the results that we've gotten so far. And I really, really would like to encourage anyone who does this to also leave a comment. Because once you vote, you can leave a comment. And I would love to hear what people think about this, because I know it's an issue of strong opinions.
Yeah. And, you know, I won't say anything because I don't want to poison the well, but I'd be very interested to see what the results are.
Yeah, exactly. We've got over 100 votes so far, and we've only had it up since Friday. So,
well, now you should get a few. UltimateAVMag.com. It's right at the kind of the middle of the page. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll see that.
Just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see it. Exactly. Each week.
The entry is modern 3D a leap forward or merely hype? Scott posted that on the site, and you'll be able to see that and then see the people in their glasses.
Yeah.
Which is funny. This is a modern shot that looks just like the old one with the red and green glasses from the 50s from House of Wax. People don't look. Let me put it this way. It may not be hype, but you still look just as dorky as you did then.
Yeah, well, that may very well be. And there are plenty of people who feel that the glasses are isolating and alienating and remove people from each other in this communal experience of watching a movie, or in the case of 3D TV, watching TV. So I would love to hear what people have to say about this. And each week I'm going to post another poll question, and I'm trying to go for those questions that really have that instill strong feelings in people one way or the other, because there are a lot of issues in home theater that, are not trivial and not simple and not obvious. And people have strong opinions one way or the other. And I'd really like to know what people think about them. So keep looking for those.
Next week, Scott's going to be here in studio with us. All day Saturday. This coming Saturday. So make sure you tune in then. 3 hours of home theater if you've got questions. We do have, I'm sure, some questions for Scott, and we will. You can answer one when I come back. How about that?
You bet.
Before we do, though, I do want to mention our friends at Carbonite. This is backup done right. Carbonite.com if you want to know more. Why is it right? Well, I'll tell you, it's got the attributes I think any good backup solution should have. One, it's got to be automatic, so you don't have to remember. I mean, if you have to remember to back up, forget it. It ain't going to happen. Or if it does, it'll happen sporadically. And almost inevitably, the hard drive will fail or the stuff will get lost or stolen when you've backed up the longest time ago, right? You've got the most to lose. So automatic, that's one. And then the other one, and this is kind of maybe not so intuitive, it can't, it has to be offsite. It cannot be, it's fine to have a local backup at a hard drive next to your computer, but if there is a fire or an earthquake or a flood or a tornado or somebody steals all your stuff, if the backup's right next to the original, you're really running a risk. You've got to have another backup somewhere on another site. And this is where Carbonite excels, because all the time you're using your computer when you're online, wherever you are, even in an internet cafe, where it's, you know, it's 128-bit SSL, so it's encrypted. Whenever you're not using your connection or you're not using the computer, all those idle cycles, it's uploading your data and protecting you. Best of all, Carbonite's very affordable. All of the personal data on your internal hard drive for less than 15 cents a day, $55 a year. Look, try it free for 2 weeks and see how it works for you. PC or Mac, go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code Leo. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. If you decide to buy, use Leo and you'll save, you'll get 2 months free. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right
at Carbonite.
Scott Wilkinson, Ultimate AV Magazine. He is in a wizard's hat today. Yes.
Here's my staff.
I like it. He's got a big crystal at the top there. That's
cool. Yeah, I'm totally into crystals. So that was very appropriate.
So give us, I'm sure you've got, we got about a minute left. If you've got
a minute left,
a quick question and answer. Yeah,
sure. I actually got an email from a listener who watches live.twit.tv. He noticed your Skypeosaurus.
Yes.
And he said, how can I do that in my home theater? There it is, the Skypeosaurus, which is four computers, I guess, four displays that are mounted together in what's called a tiled video configuration. And this fellow wanted to know, Gary Mack wanted to know, how can I do that at home? How can I do that with TVs? And the answer is, it's not easy.
They sell boxes for thousands of dollars that will do that.
Exactly. Runco makes a system called the Window Wall that starts at $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And goes up from there. And the $20,000, I think, will get you a two by two, four
Forget
displays.
It. Hang on a second. We got to take a break. Scott Wilkinson, right. UltimateAVMagazine.com. We'll be back in just a second with more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson's here. He's our home theater wizard. And today he really is.
Today I really am.
He really is in his wizard outfit. We're going to get back to the phones in a moment. 8888-ASK. Leo, once again, Scott will be here this coming Saturday for 3 hours of home theater, so we won't belabor it today. But you were explaining how... Now, there's two different ways to do... And I'm not sure what the caller was wondering. One would be to have multiple monitors with a single picture on it. You see that at trade shows a lot, where you have a video wall, and obviously you're not going to have a 400-foot monitor, so you have multiple monitors, and then you divide the signal into each one. That's the Runco thing, right? That's $20,000. That's expensive.
Correct, and that'll do it either way. It'll either spread the entire picture across all monitors or put a separate picture in each one. It'll do it either way, which is what this guy wanted to do.
Well, what if, though, he wanted to have one big screen with multiple pictures in it, picture in picture?
You can certainly do that. Jeremy Kipnis, the guy who has the $6 million home theater, who was on my podcast last week, does that with his 4K projectors. He can put four 1080p signals, four 1080p images on the screen at the same time.
Only $6 million, folks.
Well, that's including the audio, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But those projectors are very expensive. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
They're extremely expensive. So, you know, I mean, Runco is only $20,000. That's easy compared to, you know, the 180 for a Meridian 4K.
Oh, that's funny. Well, Scott, you can find Scott at theultimateavmag.com. Don't forget to take his poll on 3D. I'd be very curious. Next week, we'll talk about what audience
result of that
thinks.
Was.
Yeah.
Yes.
The poll results.
Right now, hype is leading.
Yeah. I don't want to. I'm not going to say anything.
Okay.
I don't want to poison the results.
I know what your opinion is, so we'll talk about that next week.
Anybody who listens to this show with any regularity knows exactly what I think, but we'll leave it at that. We were going to, you know, I was talking at the beginning of the hour, and you haven't yet reviewed a Google TV unit.
No, I have not gotten it yet. I was hoping to get it this week, but I haven't yet. So I am listening with great interest to your comments on it.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll form my own opinions.
No, no, I hope you will.
I'll tell you about those as soon as I can.
Somebody in the chat room said that the issue is just that you're trying to, it's not so much the Google TV, he thinks it's not so much the Google TV as the fact that you're trying to, all these disparate sources, some of which are blocked now. Mm-hmm. And I agree. That's the challenge for any device like this, is to take content from all these different sources. That's what the goal is, right? Is take content from all the possible sources, including the internet, and make it easy to access in some sort of unified form or fashion.
That's what I've always wanted for years.
And, you know, if you're a geek and you're comfortable with a computer style interface and menus and scrolling around and a lot of clicking, I don't think you'll find this difficult. But I cannot imagine an average person who just wants to watch TV being at all happy with this.
Well, that may very well be. And I will certainly see as soon as I can.
We'll get your review. Thank you, Scott. Scott Wilkinson, ultimateavmag.com. Back to the phones. Oh, we go. And Sam is our next caller, listening on the great KGO in South San Francisco. Hi, Sam.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, certainly. It's great talking to you. I do installation of cameras, security cameras for people. And I've got this one client that I've been putting DVRs into her place, and the hard drives keep failing on me. And it's just that one client. I'm at my wit's end. Don't know what.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. You know, DVRs are very challenging to hard drives, although as a security camera, it probably isn't. You know, a TiVo is tough on hard drives. Obviously, they don't fail every 5 minutes or you wouldn't have much of a TiVo. But I suspect if it's a particular client whose hard drives fail over and over again, that there's a power issue or a heat issue.
Yeah, the first DVR we put in, she didn't want it exposed outside. So we put it inside of a drawer, of a dresser. And then I figured, okay, the fan, you could hear one of the fans, you know, squealing, making all
laboring. Yeah.
So
it's pretty hot.
That fan died on me. Maybe this is what killed the hard drive. So I pulled it out of the door, put a new one in, put it on top of the dresser. And within, you know, 6 months, its hard drive is gone. And I keep placing units, not just hard drives, but the whole unit. And they keep going out. And they're out.
Well, that's good. We now know that it's not the unit that's causing the failure. It's not a bad IDE card or SATA connector or something like that. That it's actually the conditions of the house. I would put it on a UPS.
Okay.
Just to protect the power, condition the power. In fact, you know, get a good trip light or APC UPS that does power conditioning as well as battery backup.
All right.
And then it sounds like you're well aware of ventilation issues. You want to make sure that it has a... Yeah, a drawer is probably not the best place.
I learned that.
Yeah, I mean, you could ventilate the drawer. You could put fans in the back or something. You know, this is always a problem, isn't it? And I'm sure you face this when you do any home theater installation, is that on the one hand, you're putting some pretty powerful hardware in there, which requires cooling. But on the other hand, you want it to be dead silent. Nobody wants hard drive noise or whining or fans. And this is, you know, Apple TV was a classic case of a thing that, you know, the first Apple TV with a hard drive that they designed just to the limit of the tolerances. There's no fan in it, and it's a very tight enclosure, and it gets extremely hot. And I'm sure Apple did a lot of testing to say, well, how hot can we get it before it fails? And the thing, you know, I took one apart and never worked again, right? Because the tolerances are so tiny that if you don't have just the right cooling and just the, it's going to fail.
Right.
So I suspect it's something similar. I mean, you know, these boxes are tough. You know, you deal with this all the time, though. You probably know a lot better than I, Sam, what kinds of issues come up.
Yes. But this particular one, this is the only situation where, you know, it just keeps failing. So
you're using the same gear that you use in every other installation. It's not unusual hardware or anything like that.
No, I've been using this. In fact, I pulled this DVR from another location and put it into her.
Interesting. And it failed at her place.
No,
yeah, it's almost certainly it's heater power. In fact, I would say certainly. It sounds like you've solved the heat solution, so its situation. So I would probably say get a UPS. Triplight makes some excellent power conditioning UPSs. That's probably what they want.
Okay. All right. Sounds great.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, appreciate it. Great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. We do have a website where we put all this information, links to everything I'm talking about. You can find out more. It's called techguylabs.com. You'll also find a link there to our great chat room. Lots of fun in there. And to the video. We do stream video, so you can see things like Scott's wizard costume. I'm not in costume, so don't tune in for that. It's all at techguylabs.com. This portion of the Tech Guy Show, am I ready? Are we ready to go, Luis? Are you wearing your robot costume? No. Luis Oliveira at the controls playing the great music. Gina Silvati answering the phones. Is Gina wearing a costume? Is she a witch? Devil. I knew that. I knew she was either a witch or a devil. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by our friends at Squarespace.com. Now anyone can make his or her own professional-looking, slick website easy and simple with Squarespace.com. I use it for our Inside Twit blog. Many of my friends use it. I know a lot of you use it. If you're not using it yet, go to Squarespace.com, use the code TECHGUY, and you can try it out for free for 2 weeks. You don't even need a credit card. Couldn't be easier to set up. And if you decide to buy, get 10% off for the rest of the life of your site. 10% off every month for the life of your site. Just use the offer code TECHGUY. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. That's me. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Anything you want to talk about. You're about to buy something. Always, you know, it just kills me when my friends or family go out and buy some gear and they don't ask me first. Maybe they don't want to hear. But if you, but I'm glad to help you. My wife, sometimes she'll like, she bought a digital camera. She didn't ask me. I said, wait. You know you're married to the tech guy, right? You know that, right? Well, I just wanted to do my own research. But I'm the... Anyway, 88 Ask Leo. Ellie is next from Hawaii. Hello, Ellie.
Hi, Leo. Happy Halloween.
GiantDolphin.com.
That's correct. And now we have a book up there that we wrote.
Congratulations. Hawaii Through Our Eyes. It's Hawaii, if you're disabled or older and you want to know how to see it, if it's harder to get around, that kind of thing. Ellie's got a great site for that, GiantDolphin.com, and now a book. That's great. Congratulations.
It has to do with the website. It's just about... It's called You Might Be a Moron.
If. Are you getting all your aggression out here, Ellie? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
The iLife 11, I don't know how much you've played with it, but I've heard that they added accessibilities to it, and I wanted to know what you knew about it.
You know, I didn't know. I should have checked. You're my accessibility expert.
Yeah, I want to do
blind,
a podcast with you someday.
Yeah, we should. We really should. I have not tried it, but maybe somebody listening. I mean, I've tried it, but I didn't pay any attention to accessibility. I do know there's one issue. If you get iLife, a number of people reported problems with iPhoto corrupting their photo database. So there is a fix to that. One thing you could do is install iLife, and then before you open iPhoto, do a update. And that will, Apple says, fix the problem. But, you know, folks, please back up your data before you, whenever iTunes, I know it's a pain. Nobody wants to do this.
I do it all the time.
Yeah, good for you. You probably use Carbonite. When iTunes says, we've got to change the database, we've got to update the database or your email program or iPhoto, so we've got to update the database. Please, that's a warning. We're going to do something that could really mess you up. So please make a backup. The good news is, and I should tell people this, if you had database corruption, if you updated to iPhoto 11 and you had database corruption. The good news is your original photos are not damaged. It's just the database index. It makes it look like you have nothing. All your photos are still there. You just command click, or is it control? Control click, right click, the iPhoto library, select see package contents, and then inside there's a folder. Because really, you know, it's kind of clever with the way Apple does applications. They have these folder. They look like they're one folder, but really it's a bundle. The application is a bundle of stuff, and sometimes the data folder is a bundle of stuff. So you can look into this bundle and see all the folders that are in it. So you you control click on iPhoto library. You show package contents, and then you'll see all this stuff that's in there. And then the key is you want to get the originals folder that has all your pictures unmodified. They're all there. You haven't lost anything. So that's the only thing I know, Ellie. And let me tell you what. Let me ask the audience, if you've played with iLife 2011, the new Apple iLife. It comes with all new Mac computers. I have it right in front of me. I didn't try the accessibility, so I don't know how well accessibility works. Sorry, Ellie, to have let you down on that one. Ray in Sherman Oaks, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ray.
Hey, what's going on, man? I've been listening to you for a while since I moved here from Philly. You know what I mean? Sorry, you guys beat us in the, you know, San Francisco. So good luck on that.
You know, though, you guys had two world championships. You had plenty of celebration, plenty of days in the sun, and you played a great series. I really enjoyed that. It was one of the most exciting series I've ever watched. It was really fun.
So good luck to you, man.
Well, I don't know. Like, these Rangers looked good last night. I'm worried now.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
I think it might be a good one.
But you are the tech guy, so I want to buy a MacBook, right? Now, my plan was to get a MacBook Pro. I'm a filmmaker. I do like little basic videos. And screenwriting is the main thing I want to use for. But when the new Air came out, which one should I get?
Apple confused things. It's the first time in a long time I can remember where it wasn't. You just said, here's my budget, here's what I get. Now there's an overlap. This MacBook Air overlaps with the smaller, less expensive MacBook Pros.
Yeah, so what I'm saying, what should I do?
Here's the deal. And I think this is pretty important, Ray. First of all, do you use iMovie or Final Cut to edit your films?
Well, I'm going to put Final Cut on it when I purchase.
Okay, forget the Air. Because the Air is too, the storage is too small, too expensive.
Okay.
And it's a much slower processor. If you want to use it as an editing tool, that's a high-end use. You want to get one of the MacBook Pros. And you want a bigger screen, too. You're not going to edit on an 11 or 13-inch screen. You want a 15 at least.
Okay. Cool.
I'll solve that for you right there. Now, if portability is the issue and you don't have, you know, you're not editing video or playing games because it's not a good gaming device, just the idea of having this little tiny thing that you can carry with you on the plane or as you travel or just back and forth to work, I love the Air. I'm very happy with it. But it's $1,000. It's not cheap. I mean, it's a netbook style computer for about three times more than a netbook costs.
Yeah. I think I better go with the Pro because basically I want to do some little, like, 5-minute little videos and stuff like that, and just basically screenwriting.
Yeah. And now, what do you use for screenwriting?
Final Draft.
Oh, there you go. That's the king of them, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the king. Yeah.
That's neat. What kind of film? So you're doing short films on YouTube, or?
Yeah, I want to do some short films, but my goal, I'm working on, you know, professional scripts that I'm writing. You know what I mean?
So you moved to Hollywood. You moved to Hollywood with the dream.
Definitely, man, definitely.
So Ray, good luck. That's great.
By Ray Morgan, you know, a comedy. So, you know,
you're writing comedies? Awesome. Ray, I'm going to look for him. That's great.
Okay. Thank you so much, man. We appreciate the information.
Always good to talk to you. Yeah, I think for if you're going to do video editing, Photoshop, anything high-end, you need the speed of the i5 or i7. And more importantly, you need the disk storage and you know, even the top of the line Air, the $15.99 version is only 256 gigs. You could add 4 gigs of RAM. You could get a slightly faster processor, but this is not a heavy duty computer. This is a computer for somebody who's really doing most of the work in the cloud, you know, on Google Docs or docs.com or somewhere like that. Somebody who's you know, just checking email, surfing the net, that kind of thing. it's not a heavy duty, you know, heavy lifting computer. And video editing is a heavy lifting task. Greg, Woodland Hills, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Leo. First, I want to thank you. You helped me a couple of months back. I run a company called Movies by Kids, and you helped me find a stop-motion animation camera.
Ah, and how did that work out for you?
It worked fantastic. You've made hundreds of kids happy.
Which one did you get?
I got the Coolpix S51C.
Good choice, yeah.
And yeah, it's really been great. The kids love it.
So you teach, it's like a summer camp for kids who want to learn film. You do it in Los Angeles, Orange County, and Santa Clarita.
Yes.
It's just a neat program, moviesbykids.com.
Yes, thank you for the plug. My question today is actually about email. I'm having trouble with email on my iPhone. Right now, I think it's an IMAP versus POP issue, but I'm not sure. Right now, you know, if I go to Gmail and I check my Gmail account, and then on my phone, I check my Gmail account, it appears that the ones I've already checked are already checked.
Right.
You know, if that makes sense. But for some reason, my Movies by Kids account, I cannot do that.
Yeah, IMAP does that because if you're using Exchange or IMAP on your iPhone to set up your mail, your Gmail account, and the preferred, by the way, is Exchange because then you could do contacts and calendar as well, then any changes you make anywhere will propagate to the entire system. They'll show up on mail, they'll show up on the phone, they'll show up on the web.
Right.
If you use POP, does not do that.
So do you know of a service that I can use my Movies by Kids account, like an email service that I can sign up for and still use my Movies by Kids account as opposed to having to sign up for a whole new email address?
Yeah. So you have moviesbykids.com, right?
Right.
So all you do is instead of having the mail hosted by that service is use it as a forwarding. You say, oh, I want to have all the mail go, and you can have it go to Gmail.
Right.
And then you have the free Gmail. So the mail is forwarded not to your hosting service, which is currently doing your email, I take it. Yeah, then they're doing POP, and that's exactly the problem. It's just you have to call the hosting service and say, I want you to, instead of hosting the mail, forward the mail, create a Movies by Kids Gmail account. It could be any name you want. And then you'll have all the benefits of Gmail with the same email address. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 888, ask Leo. Let me actually add to the answer that I gave our last caller, Ray. Was it Ray who was, he wanted the advantages that he had on his Gmail account with his Popmail account. So he had an internet service provider, actually was a web hosting company, who was getting his email for his business, moviebykids.com. And it's a POP server. So there's two different commonly used, actually there's three commonly used kinds of email servers. There's POP, which most internet service providers use. There's IMAP, which is a little bit more sophisticated. It's based on the server side. And then there's, of course, Microsoft Exchange, also server side. IMAP and Exchange are roughly the same, at least in functionality. POP is not. The reason internet service providers use POP email for your email solution is with POP, you get the mail, put it on your local computer, and delete it on the server. So they don't have to dedicate as much server space with a POP mail solution. And, you know, that's how we got mail for a long time, right? You'd launch Outlook or Outlook Express or Apple Mail. It'd go out and get the mail, delete it on the server, and you'd have it locally. Problem is, if you have, and as many people do nowadays, multiple computers, you might want to have one at work, one at home, might have a laptop too. Once you've downloaded the mail from the POP server, you can't get it on those other computers. So then people started checking the boxes as don't delete from server. And that causes all sorts of problems. First of all, the internet service providers not giving you a lot of storage, so you quickly can use up that storage. Synchronizing becomes a problem. Sometimes you get duplicates. And most importantly, when you mark something read or mark something sent, it doesn't get saved to all the machines. So you might have read a message on one machine, but the other machines don't know that. You might have responded to it on one machine, but the other machines don't see that. So it's very hard to keep it all in sync. For people who want to do that, they often use something called IMAP instead of POP. IMAP, ISPs don't use it generally because it stores all your messages on the server and then synchronizes with all your machines. So when you've read a message on one machine, it signals red on all the machines. When you send a message, it goes to the sent box, which appears on all the machines. You know, you've responded and you can read your reply. So all the machines are in sync with IMAP. And, you know, you can, with IMAP, still download the messages and host them and have them locally. That's fine. I mean, IMAP gives you a lot more flexibility. Exchange takes it another step farther because Exchange, which is a Microsoft solution, also synchronizes calendars and contacts. So you get email, calendars, and contacts. Now, Gmail, Google's mail service, offers all three choices. Free. You can have POP, IMAP, or Exchange. The best way to do it on an iPhone probably is Exchange. That way you get the Google calendars and the Google contacts as well as your email. But you can use their IMAP server. So my suggestion to him, he wanted the benefits of his Gmail account on his hosted POP account. My suggestion was, well, just have it, instead of hosting it, have it forward to Gmail. But there's another way. You know, Gmail will also, for free, go out and get the mail from your hosted account. We'll get your POP mail and put it on the Gmail server, which you then access via IMAP. That might be the easiest way of all. You go into the Gmail mail and forwarding settings, and you'll see you can set up to log into your Movies by Kids accounts, your POP account, grab all the email there. You can delete it from the server or leave it. It's your choice. But now it's on Gmail, where you can access it via IMAP or Exchange. So you get all the benefits. But if for that to work, you're going to stop getting your email directly from Movies by Kids. You don't want to accidentally, you know, that'll get things out of sync. Just stop logging into that account. Just use Gmail for everything. Gmail's a good solution, I think. It's free. It's very powerful. Google keeps it up to date. They have great spam filtering on it. I've pretty much moved everything to a Gmail. Even if you don't even see it as Gmail, you know, you just use it on your iPhone or whatever. It's really, I think, a very good solution. And frankly, Google Calendars is a great calendaring solution. And Google Contacts is a great contact solution. And when you use these systems, then everything seems to just kind of work together. You know, Outlook can synchronize up. Your phone can synchronize up. Almost all new phones, you log into your Google account and it says, okay, fine, I got everything. We no longer have to, it used to be, I don't know if you remember, you get a new phone and you'd sit there laboriously all evening entering in your phone numbers again. Don't have to do that anymore. So, the new Windows mobile phones will do it. The Apple phones do it. All the Android phones do it. Even the Palm Pre did it. And I imagine anything HP does with the Palm, because they bought the Palm company, anything they do will also do it. You just log into your Google account and you got your mail, you got your calendar, you got your contacts. It's a great way to go. Greg in Woodland Hills, you're next, Leo Laporte. Oh, wait a minute, I was Greg. Sorry. Did that solve the problem, Greg? I should have mentioned you don't have to move it. You can just get it.
That was perfect. I was listening the whole time.
Good. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. Good luck with the Movies by Kids, too. What a great idea for like a camp or, you know, an enrichment program for kids to teach them how to do movie making. I love it. Will in Anaheim, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Will.
Hi, Leo. How you doing? Big fan.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Here's my situation. Mm-hmm. I have the wonderful Mac Mini. Love it to death. Does wonderful things. Mm-hmm. I have the iPod Touch. Wonderful unit. Does wonderful things. I'm torn between the iPad and the new BlackBerry tablet. If Verizon goes ahead and get the iPhone in January, which I think they will, I'm probably going to switch over to the iPhone, but I'm a BlackBerry guy. So, which would you prefer, BlackBerry?
Well, I think the BlackBerry tablet, the Playbook, doesn't exist. So it's really, there's nothing to buy yet. I think the reason BlackBerry announced this is exactly what's happening to you, Will. It's slowing people down. They're saying, I was going to buy an iPad, but wait, BlackBerry's going to do a tablet. We don't know when. We don't know how much. We don't know anything. They've just shown us, mock-ups.
All right.
So we're getting closer to it, but there is no such thing yet. And I don't think in the tech industry it's worth waiting for something like that. It could never happen. If you want an iPad, get an iPad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll be right back. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Stamps.com. Why go to the post office and wait in line when you could print your own official U.S. postage? Yeah, it's absolutely legal. All you have to do is get a Stamps.com account, use your own printer, your own computer, Stamps.com. Tell you what, I got a no risk trial offer right now for you. Just go to Stamps.com, click the try it free button, use my name, Leo. It's a $100 bonus offer, includes an electronic postage scale and $45 free postage. Stamps.com, offer code Leo. The other day I spelled Leo. My wife said, do you really think people don't know how to spell Leo? Yeah, maybe, you know, you might. L-E-O. You might think it's Leah or something like L-E-O. Leo. Tom in Riverside, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. Been listening to you since the tech TV days. I got a question about my XP Pro machine.
Okay.
When I click on the start and the search button, all the search features work except for all files and folders. When I click on that one, the screen goes blank to the color of the desktop, and then the icons come back, and I'm back to square one. I reformatted the machine Friday to get rid of this problem. It worked up until today, and now I'm back to where I was.
Oh, no. It was working fine, and then it stopped?
Yeah. Yeah, the search program, the search was working, and then this morning I went to search for a file, and I'm back to where I was. It just flickers and gives me a blank desktop, and no more all files. Now, the other ones work, though. The other criteria within the search button works. But that doesn't.
Isn't that interesting? It sounds like there's something that you're doing as a matter of course, like installing Firefox or something, that is disabling that search feature.
Okay.
Can you remember doing something right before it stopped working?
Not really. In fact, I even did a restore point back to last Friday when I redid.
Really? And that didn't work either?
Didn't repair it, no. So.
The search for all is a mixture of a variety of components and bits. And it's what's odd. I mean, I could see how it would be broken, but doing what you did should fix it and kind of permanently. The fact that it broke again is a little concerning.
Well, one of it's the almost on the internet when I did a search for search problems on Google was people were saying that it could be malware.
Something. Yeah, but why would it come back after you did a complete reinstall?
Pardon me?
Why would it come back if you did a complete reinstall?
I don't know.
You formatted the drive, you started all over again?
Friday. Now, today, this morning, I did a restore point back to that point.
Right.
And it didn't repair it.
That did not repair it. Well, you know, I don't know. It could be malware, although I don't know why malware would break that in particular and not other things.
Yeah.
And how did you get it again? I would look at, if you did a true clean install, then you did something again that broke it again.
Uh-huh.
And it could be install, you know, for instance, Internet Explorer is kind of crucial to all of this. It could be that you change the default browser type. Do you use IE for your browser?
No, I have Firefox, and it's my default.
Yeah. It could be that as soon as you made Firefox your default browser, it broke something.
Oh, okay.
They're saying, are there other computers on your network?
Yes.
Could be that one of them is, this could happen, and one of them is infected and spreads the infection via a worm over your network.
Yeah. The other one.
So,
no.
Next time when you install Windows, make sure before you do anything, including hooking it up to your network, you turn on the Windows firewall. That isolates that computer from the rest of your LAN.
Okay.
Did you install any software right before it stopped working, like the Audible books manager, things like that?
No. I mean, you know, I installed all the software that I had previously. I had Office on there, Microsoft Money, that type of stuff, but I installed
them. It's my suspicion that one of those programs is breaking it.
Mm. Now, if I
I'm looking at, they sent me a the chat room sent me a forum thread from techguy.org, which is not the same tech guy, in which a long thread which we'll put in the chat room and I'll put on the show notes, in which they gave them all sorts of solutions. And finally, at the end, after 17 different solutions, the guy says, ah, I figured it out. I installed the Audible Download Manager. I've uninstalled it, fixed the registry keys, and it's working again. Okay. So this is the problem with modern operating systems. They're hideously complex, and sometimes you get interactions between software and the operating system. So that's why I'm wondering if there's a program that you installed that it was working right up to the time you installed it, and then it stopped working, then you got the culprit, but it's hard to figure out, right?
Yeah. I you know, after you do a reformat and you reinstall all your programs, it's hard to remember exactly when things went bad.
Sure. It worked right up to the point where you did right after the reformat, but before you started installing software?
No, I did the...
When did you test it?
I reformatted the machine on Friday to get rid of this problem and several other problems that I had. And everything worked fine upon, you know, for the first day or two. And then this morning, this problem re-rose.
Yeah. Well, you know, the chat room has all sorts of ideas. Some say it's a browser hijacker object, which it certainly could be. That could be malware. It could be spreading through the LAN. It could be something that's happening from a site that you visit. It could be a hard drive that is, you know, falling apart, and it just happens that that's happening in the same place. It could be all sorts of things. It's very hard for me to narrow it down to just one.
Okay. Well, yeah. I was hoping I'd get an answer. So
I wish I could say, Tom, oh, it's definitely that. But it's absolutely possible for me to come up with 12 different scenarios that it could be. Most likely is an interaction with some other software. Look at some third-party software. I certainly would scan it. Something you can do real quickly. You're running an older version of Windows. I think a move to Windows 7 might be indicated here as well. But one thing you can do quickly, Microsoft, every second Tuesday of the month when they do their patches, they send out those updates. They also update something they call the Malicious Software Removal Tool. And it's not exactly an antivirus. What it really is a scanner that looks for malicious software. And Microsoft has been pretty good about keeping this up to date. Unfortunately, when you get the update, it doesn't do a thorough scan of your drive. So one thing you might want to try just to see is click Start, Run, and you'll get a command line. And type this, MRT, not MSRT, but MRT, Microsoft Removal Tool. Hit return. You'll get a GUI, a full, you know, a program will launch, program you didn't even know you had probably because it doesn't show up in the start menu. And then click the thorough scan and do that. And just to see, that's been up to date. Make sure you do all your Windows updates before you do this, by the way. Dr. Mom's asking a legitimate question. I assume that when you did a reinstall, you formatted and reinstalled. If you just reinstalled on top of... then that didn't fix it. But it sounds like, Dr. Mom, because he had to reinstall all his apps, he probably did do a format install. Another choice would be have a good antivirus. And let me tell you about a good antivirus. A lot of people use the freebies, and there are good freebies out there, but they're not as good. And I'll tell you what, when you get a virus, you'll be wishing you paid for the best because you really don't want to get malware on your system. That's why I tell everybody. And by the way, I put my money where my mouth is. It's why I use Nod32 on all my Windows machines. Nod32 is the best antivirus made. Come on, $40 a year, it's worth it. And actually, it's less if you have multiple machines or you get a multi-year subscription. But you can try it free for 30 days right now. Just go to ESET. That's the company that makes it, ESET. ESET.com/Leo. And try Nod32 free for 30 days. I think you'll see why I use it. It's the most effective. CNET just gave it their 5 out of 5 stars, editor's choice. It's very lightweight, does not bog your system down. You'll barely notice it's working, except it is. You just will notice you don't get those beasties, the worms, the Trojans, spyware, adware, even phishing scams and rootkits, completely blocked. Call 866-935-ESET to get it as well. You don't have to go to the web. You can just call them, 866-935-ESET. If you use Windows, you need Nod32. We talked yesterday about FireSheep. I should probably bring this up right now. This would be a good one. We did, my security guy, Steve Gibson, called in yesterday to talk about this very scary program that he was very happy to see because it kind of forces the issue. It turns out for years, hackers have been able to hijack your computer when you're using an open access spot. Let's say you go in with your laptop, going to go to your favorite coffee shop. They have an open access spot. You log into that. You know, you join it, and now you start surfing. All well and good. You go to your Facebook account. Let's use Facebook as an example. This would work with many, many other accounts. But let's say you go to your Facebook account and you log in. Now Facebook, in order to keep you from having to log in every single time you go to another page on Facebook, simplifies things. Most sites do this by sending you a special token, a cookie they call it, that you store on your hard drive that says, I'm me for this session. That way you can go to another Facebook page. It says, well, do you have the token? And you say, yes, I do. Okay, it's you. Keep surfing. Otherwise, you'd have to log in every time. You don't want to have to do that. Well, it turns out that that token can be hijacked by somebody else in the coffee shop. And that person can be you. Without having to know your password, without having to log in, they can access your Facebook, your Twitter, your Yelp, your Google accounts, many, many, many different accounts. They all do it. It's called a cross-site cookie stealing. I'll give it that name. Now, in the past, it's been very difficult to do, but somebody just published a Firefox extension called FireSheep that makes it trivial, makes it easy. You don't have to know anything to do it. I tried it. It worked so easily. I could see everybody in the coffee shop. I could log in as them to their Twitter accounts and their Facebook accounts. Horrors. I mean, half a million people have downloaded this program in the first few days. It's out there. What do you do? Well, for the time being, stop using open access spots. You might talk to the owner of your coffee shop and say, could you please turn on WPA encryption? You can give everybody the password. That's fine. You can make it be part of the name of the router. The password is password. That's fine. But just by turning that on, you're isolating everybody's session and this FireSheep will no longer work. Ultimately, it's going to require everybody to do what Google just did with their Gmail, which is turn on encryption for the full session. Facebook needs to do it. Twitter needs to do it. I just want a word to go out. It is no longer safe to use an open access spot. It is very risky. Stop doing it. Encourage them to put password protection on it. Really, they need to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion to the Halloween special edition of the tech guy. I was working in the tech guy labs late one night. Norm in San Francisco, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Norm.
Oh, Leo, how are you today?
I am well. How are you?
Well, I wish I could say as well, but I'm not. I have a blue screen problem. And I've gotten for about 2 months, 2.5 months, comes up periodically. It's becoming more and more of a problem on startup. I've got a number of different page faults and error codes, I guess they're called, OX000 with the...
Yeah, those are all of that stuff. You know, it's don't get me started on error messages. Error messages are useless. By the time the computer realizes it's dead, it's kind of moved 1,000 instructions beyond what causes its death. So the error codes they're not really of any use to anybody but the guy who wrote the software. He knows where the line of code is that failed, and he can use that dump. But basically, it's not of any use to an end user. All you need to know is,
I crashed.
Now, blue screen is, of course, the most severe kind of crash, a crash that essentially says it's so bad I can't go on.
Okay.
And in a modern operating system, what version of Windows are you using?
Let's see. I have Vista Home Premium 32-bit.
Okay. Good. So a modern operating system, Vista is one of them. That kind of crash can only occur in the most severe cases. You know that a program can crash and you just keep on going. Programs don't normally have access to the system in the same way that the system does or the hardware does. And so programs normally can't cause a blue screen of death. The only thing that can cause this blue, it's called the blue screen of death, by the way, of. And the only thing that can cause the blue screen of death is either a hardware failure, an operating system failure, or a driver failure. Those are the only things that can crash the system, a modern system, like starting with XP, Vista, Windows 7, OS 10. They can only be crashed that hard by something that has access to the lowest level of the operating system. We call it ring zero, the ring zero memory.
Okay.
So you got, so what that does is it narrows it down a little bit. It means it's not Microsoft Word that killed you.
Okay. Got it.
It's a driver or it's a hardware failure.
RAM, I'm assuming, is one of the, it could.
RAM is possible. Yeah. So let me ask you some questions. Does this happen every time you turn it on? When does it happen?
I can get it. Okay. Running, but I got to go through the safe mode. I got to, you know, I do a whole bunch of, you know, I got to restart like 2-3 times. Eventually, yeah. I'll get it back up. Today, same thing. I got it back up. I'm thinking RAM, you know, if it's a hardware problem. You
could be RAM. Could be RAM. Could be the power supply. It could be a driver of, you know, I usually look at drivers first, the video drivers and so forth.
I updated all of those, and everything says they're up to date. You know, I just went through my device manager and updated every driver.
It could also be that there is a system file that's corrupted, and every time Windows, it could go right up to that point, but as soon as it starts to load it, it goes, aha! Now, does it run just fine in safe mode?
Yeah, it does come up in safe mode, and it does seem to run okay in the safe mode.
Okay.
In a limited capacity.
So, safe mode, remember what safe mode is. It's using all of Windows is working. It's just that it's a stripped down set of drivers. And for instance, it doesn't use the full video driver. It uses a standard 640x480 VGA driver.
Okay.
And so
it doesn't come up in safe mode.
Sometimes it doesn't. Okay.
Say for example, I had to restart it again because it blue screened even in safe mode. But normally has come up in safe mode every time.
Yeah, again, this is like that last caller where because there's so many things that can cause a problem like this, it's impossible for me to say, well, it's very simple. You just take that Framets out, replace it, maybe do a quick oil change, and everything will be fine. It could be any number of things. But we know because it's a blue screen that it's a very low-level problem. So, yes, it could be RAM. I would not start with hardware, mostly because if it's a hardware problem, it's hard to fix. It requires swapping stuff out. It's going to cost you money. It's almost always better to try to update the software. You have started that. You fixed the drivers. Make sure you got the latest drivers. You probably have made sure, and I would do this if it's a desktop, open it up, make sure it's clean in there and that everything's well seated. It could be a heating problem. It could be a power problem. Could be a hard drive problem. It could be so many things. It's very difficult to track this down. I put him on hold. Let me go back and see. How old, Norm, is this system?
Seven.
Say again?
Everything that I see on, you know, when I do the diagnostic shows, mid-2007 is hardware.
Okay. That's pretty recent.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't buy this machine yourself?
Yes, I did. I bought it myself. It's an HP.
Okay.
Pavilion.
And, of course, it's out of warranty now. It's just old enough so that you can't get it fixed from HP.
No.
You know, I would say one quick and easy thing to do is just put in a new hard drive, you know, reinstall everything from the recovery disks onto a new hard drive. First thing I would check is the hard drive. That's a cheap and easy fix.
Okay.
By reinstalling the operating system, you're making sure that there's nothing, you know, no software running that's causing the problem, no drivers and so forth.
Okay.
If it continues to fail, then yeah, you got a more serious issue, motherboard or memory. And those things are, you know, very tricky to track down.
Got it. Okay, well, thank you for the assistance.
Sure, Norm. Yeah. It's one of those things that, unfortunately, computers have gotten to be black boxes for us, and they should be, to be honest. The days of shade tree mechanics are gone in automotive circles, right? You don't change your own plugs or change your oil anymore on a modern car, and computers are getting to be more and more like that. They're black boxes. Used to be you could maybe take a voltmeter and check the leads and swap some things out and make it work again. But now it's, think of it as a sealed unit and probably often worth just replacing if it's failing that much. People are suggesting mem tests, which is true. In fact, nowadays, a lot of computers now have memory tests built into the BIOS that you can run. I don't want to go through too long a list of things you can try. Very hard to figure it out. There's somebody in the chat room saying, just give me the code from the blue screen of death. I can tell you right now, useless. Totally useless. One good suggestion, boot from a Linux Live CD. See if the hardware works, then you'll know it's the software if it does. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's a good suggestion. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. Carbonite. Try it free right now. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. And you'll save when you buy 2 months free and use the offer code Leo. Carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the phone number on this Halloween Eve. Boy, a lot of scary stories.
There's nothing more scary than the blue screen of death.
Actually, it is pretty scary. Let's move on. iDoc Mark is on the line, our famous eye doctor from Syracuse, New York. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Isn't last night Halloween Eve and tonight Halloween itself?
I guess it is. Okay. Yeah, all right. So it's Halloween.
Okay. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Do you do anything in the office for Halloween?
No, because I closed the office a month ago.
Oh, you don't really? You don't practice anymore?
Spending more time with my wife. She's doing chemo for a year.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Good for you to do that. That's great.
December 20 to 23rd, I'm going to be in the Berkeley area. I wondered, are you going to be in town?
Are you? Yeah, come visit. Well, we're shutting down Christmas Eve. And I'll be taking the radio show off Christmas Day and Boxing Day.
Well, I'll official visit appointment the way it says on your website.
Please come by. Email my sister and we'll make some space for iDoc Mark. Hey, as long as you're on the line, I don't know if you heard in the first hour when I was talking with Scott Wilkinson about the eye's ability to resolve a picture. We were talking about these new 4K screens that are four times more pixels than an HD screen. And of course, you can't really compare film resolution to pixel density. And ultimately, it all comes down to, can the eye even see it? So what is there a kind of a native resolution of the eye?
There is, but it's tricky because with motion, we pick up things. Picture looking through a picket fence. Now move while you're looking through it, and you see everything. And it's the whatever gets in between is just, you know, the brain puts it all together.
It's so that's persistence of vision? Is that called persistence of vision? Is that the...
Well, it's more like when we had the first pictures of the moon or Mars, computer-enhanced photography.
Oh, interesting.
All the images are put together. Somebody can have depth perception with one eye if they just move a little bit.
I do, yeah. Well, you know what's really interesting, as I learn about it, is that the mechanics of the eye, the optics of the eye, that's not nearly as important as what the brain's doing with what it gets.
Correct. The image in the eye is not a wonderful image. We can... Yeah. Sorts of things.
So we're doing, as you said, it's like the computer processing. Our brain is processing this kind of faint image we're getting from the eyes and making it into what we see.
When I go to other eye docs and they look in my left eye, they say I have a gigantic floater, just an area that's not nearly as clear. Well, it's my eye and I don't see it. My brain...
I find this fascinating. It's just an amazing subject.
Yep.
But that's not why you called.
Oh, I usually call you as the master of Mac. But today I'm calling you as the Wizard of Windows. Yesterday, listening to you and Steve Gibson, I thought, okay, I have a Fios router. It came with WEP. It's time to upgrade it to WPA. All my Macs, all I had to do was reboot them, and they immediately, because I used the same password. It was a complicated one. So I used the same password. They immediately logged in. I have this one Toshiba laptop, Windows XP. It cannot see the router now.
Not support WPA. You should check and see and make sure that the hardware in that Toshiba is up to date and can support WPA. Not all hardware can support WPA.
What it says to me is wireless network connection not connected after OSAR 500 something. And I double click and it gives me all these warnings.
When you run the software and you can, you know, you'll have the hardware card has its own software, Intel or IBM or whoever made it. And then there's Windows itself has Wi-Fi software. But check in the software when you set enter in a password, it should give you the choice between a WEP or a WPA password. If it doesn't, then it's not it probably is not compatible with WPA. You might check for an update for the Wi-Fi card in the Toshiba.
Okay. It usually doesn't. It says it doesn't see the card. This time it sees it and says not connected.
Yeah, well, not connected means maybe it couldn't connect because of password. You might also, somebody's suggesting, and this is true, probably delete that setting entirely, that network connection entirely, and start from fresh.
Okay, that's what I had to do with one of the Macs.
Yeah. Just because you had the same password doesn't necessarily mean it's going to do it properly. I would suggest removing it and trying that, but it is also a possibility, Mark, with an older machine. You said it's running XP. It's at least 5 years old.
About 2.5 years old, XP Professional.
Oh, if it's 2.5 years old, it almost certainly does WPA.
It says so. It's one of the choices. Sometimes it says...
Oh, it is. Okay.
WEP or WPA. It doesn't ask me to tell it the difference. It just asks for the password.
Yeah, I think what I would do is delete that network connection and start over. It may be saying, oh, I know this is a WEP password and trying to send a WEP password.
When I say find the connections, find the routers, and it says we don't see one at all.
Yeah, I would just go into the network control panel and go to the network connections and delete that Wi-Fi connection entirely.
Okay.
Mr. Thompson says in the chat room, you have to do that every time. You know what? You're in the chat room. I know you're in the chat room, Mark. Ask Mr. Thompson. He's saying in the chat room what to do. He says, yeah, delete the, I don't know if you delete the network device or I would suggest deleting the network connection, but not the device.
Okay.
And then adding a new Wi-Fi connection. So you have a profile, add a new Wi-Fi connection. Yeah.
It works.
And go
plug it into the router with the, Cat 5.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's not a test because that's the Ethernet.
Oh, good question. To your knowledge, have you ever had an episode of Daily Gizwiz in which Dick did not say exactly?
Yeah, I saw your email on that. He's talking about one of our podcasts, the Daily Gizwiz Show, where we talk about gadgets every day with Dick DiBartolo from Mad Magazine. And yes, Dick likes to say exactly. Exactly, Mark, exactly. Monica in Oregon, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Monica.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Hey, I'm a trekker, and I'm from Oregon, but I'm trekking in Wyoming right now.
Awesome.
I have a problem with my Gmail account. I thought maybe you would have a clue.
Okay.
When I first made a Gmail account, some of the letters when I would type in it, like text or anything like that, some of the letters would not come up. So you'd have to type really, really slow, da 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 da. And that drove me crazy. But anyway, so I finally, after a while, I went into the troubleshooting archives and I found an old edition of Gmail. And
If you see sometimes on Gmail, you can see at the bottom, it says, you want to use classic or do you HTML or do you want to use the more modern Gmail? And maybe that you have an older computer or a slower computer or a slower connection that can't keep up with the, fancy Gmail.
I have Verizon, the 760, plug-in deal, for the,
Right.
Yeah. But my problem is now it's getting to the point where when I have to send an attachment with an email, like for my bill of lading that go into the office, it won't do it. And then the little sign comes on and it says, Internet Explorer has stopped working. If we find a solution, we'll let
you. All right. Stop using Internet Explorer for one thing. That's a horrible browser. What version of Windows are you using?
I have Vista.
Vista. So go to chrome.google.com, download Google Chrome, which is a much, much better browser. You're probably using IE 7 or 8. Chrome is a much faster browser and works better with Google's Gmail. I really don't like Internet Explorer much at all. And Firefox, which was for a long time the choice, is okay. But I think Chrome is the browser to use these days. You're not going to get rid of IE. You'll still have it, and you can use it. But when you use Gmail, I would suggest using Chrome. And then when you get to your Gmail account, if you're still having trouble, right at the bottom of your Gmail account, the very, very bottom, and it's a tiny, tiny type, it says basic HTML. You can click that button, and that'll give you a much simpler version of Gmail that will work better. What's happening right now is all that JavaScript, there's a ton of JavaScript in Gmail, is crashing Internet Explorer. It's not keeping up. Chrome will do much better. It is about 3 or 4 times faster at JavaScript. In fact, one of the reasons Google created Chrome is because they were very unhappy with the state of browsers in general. They said, this is not helping us because we are hobbling. We have to hobble our products to work with these lousy browsers. So, the speed of Internet Explorer at this is very slow. So I don't think you'll need to use basic HTML if you just get Chrome. Google.com/Chrome or chrome.google.com. It's fast. It's easy. It's frankly, on Mac or Windows, it's all I use these days. I really like the Chrome browser, and I think you'll find it's much, much better for you, Monica. Hey, I'm glad you listen. I appreciate it. Links to the show notes, all of the stuff I talk about, every page, where to get Chrome, fixes and so forth, are all at techguylabs.com. That's my website, techguylabs.com. And you'll find a link there to the chat, too. A lot of fun. A lot of fun in there. You can make fun of me, the kids in the back of the class. Let me just see. There's about 781 people in there right now. You can join them. Go to techguylabs.com. Click the chat link. You can also watch live video of the show. I am not wearing a costume, though. Don't get your hopes up. This is this thing you see, this scary, terrifying visage, that's actually my face. Techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866 the number 2 get net to get DSL Extreme. I guess on a radio show, I could do costumes by just doing a voice. I could be Thurston Howell III. All I have to do is keep my teeth together, lovey. You know, see, that's the nice thing about it. You don't have to dress up in radio. You just, just do a different voice. 888-88-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. We're talking tech. I can't imagine a scarier subject for Halloween. Scott Palmdale, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Leo. I hope you can get an answer too for me here. I got a question about replacing my browser, but the main problem is Carbonite. I got hijacked, I guess, by one of these things that they steal your browser and then they want money from you to release.
Oh, I hate that. Oh, we're hearing a lot of people with these nowadays.
Yeah, and this came off of MSN homepage, believe it or not.
Well, no, it didn't.
Well,
it didn't. I promise you it didn't.
Well,
I promise you it didn't. Microsoft does not have malware on its homepage.
Okay, well, I clicked on this entertainment story, and all of a sudden my ESET thing kept flashing, with this deal, and I didn't. So it already stole my browser.
You already were infected, or something else was going on. But one thing I can assure you is you don't get malware from mainstream sites like Microsoft. Believe me.
Well,
if Microsoft, let me put it this way: if MSN had malware on it, it would be a front page story on every tech site.
No, I suppose so.
Yeah.
But I spent from noon till I was up till midnight or beyond getting this thing reformatted. And where I'm at now is my Carbonite, it put all my files back But there's nothing in the address book. There's nothing in the favorites. And all the folders with pictures, everything is empty.
Yikes. Now, it's possible you weren't backing those up.
Well, Carbonite had, you know, it's either the little yellow dot or the blue one, or rather the green one, indicates that this is backed up. Everything has the green.
Well, remember, the address book is different from the data in the address book.
Okay. But as far
so
as...
your ad, it could say address book is backed up. That's not the data. You got to back up the data as well.
Okay. But all the folders with pictures, nothing came back. The folders came back, but there's nothing in them. Every single folder is empty.
Yikes.
So do I have to systematically go back to their site and try to put the stuff?
Well, one thing I would suggest, and this is, I think, one reason Carbonite added this feature, is you can log on from another computer to your Carbonite account. And I would do this, folks, if you're using any backup solution. Periodically check and make sure it's backing up what you think it's backing up. So with Carbonite, as an example, you log on to your account. You could do it from your system or any system and see what it's got. And see if it's, make sure it's got the stuff you think it's got. It is possible, you know, one another thing, Scott, to keep in mind is that Carbonite, because it's using your internet access, doesn't back it all up instantly. It's not like copying it to an external hard drive. And what may have happened is it hadn't finished backing up. It'll tell you where it's complete or not. I think you know that, and I think you know that that's what those little lights tell you. It's my guess that either it didn't complete backing up or it wasn't told to back that up. You also should be patient because it doesn't necessarily restore right away. It really depends on your internet access. So maybe that it's still restoring. Cross your fingers. I'm sorry to hear that happen. Now, another thing to do, you know, I presume you've gotten rid of this infection. I really strongly recommend the best way to get rid of the infection is to reformat and reinstall, because the other problem you could be having, may not even know it, is you may still have an infection. And it may be impacting other stuff as well, including things like pictures. Sorry, Scott. I wish you see this. It is Halloween. It's a little scary. Always check your backups, and really do. If you're using Carbonite, go online. I do this with my daughter periodically. I go online to the account and see, make sure it's backing up what I think. In fact, I didn't set it up to back up her desktop file. And I realized, I woke up in the middle of the night, thought, wait a minute. I bet you she, instead of saving stuff into her documents folders, as you're supposed to, she probably does like most people does, just saves it on the desktop, right? Do you do that? Well, make sure you're backing up the desktop folder. I had to go in there and say, honey, don't forget to back up the desktop folder too. Always a good idea. Greg in Silverado, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm very well. What can I do for you on this Halloween?
Very simple, scary question.
Okay.
It's got an LG flat screen, and we want to be able to download Netflix movies. What's your recommendation?
Well, first of all, you don't download Netflix movies. You stream them. You don't get to keep them. You just get to stream them. But that's fine.
Okay.
If the LG itself doesn't have it, it might. Does it have apps? Does it have widgets?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. Then I would strongly suggest a Roku box. They range from $69 to $99. They're very easy to set up. They have an HDMI connector. They connect it to the internet either via wireless or Ethernet. And gives you access to your total Netflix account. It's great. Okay. Now, the Apple TV is also $99. It will do the same. The Apple TV allows you to also access iTunes. If you buy stuff on iTunes, that would be a better choice. If you don't use iTunes but you use Amazon, then the Roku would be a better choice. I personally, that's what I use, is a Roku box, and I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, taking your calls, 8888. Ask Leo. I don't know. Is Chris Marquardt going to come on the show today? I can't tell. Is he in the chat room? Let me just check and see. Our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, from Tips from the Top Floor, the wonderful podcast for people who want to learn more about photography, joins us from time to time to talk about photography. I think we've got an iron photography contest going around, or at least a challenge, a mission. If you go to Flickr, you could see it if you look for the Tech Guy Group, flickr.com, F-L-I-C-K-R.com, and go to the Tech Guy Group there. You can see our iron photographer contest assignment right now.
And it's a scary one.
It is spooky. You don't want to review the entries today, do you?
No, we're not doing that. That's still running, but it is very Halloween themed because people are supposed to take pictures with items orange in them, eyes, but no pumpkins.
Orange and eyes, but don't
orange and eyes, but
don't,
no pumpkin.
Don't do the obvious trivial cliche of having a pumpkin in there.
and the participants are supposed to break a rule, one of their photography rules.
Oh, you're doing that too? Oh,
yep,
man.
And it's amazing the results are coming in. People are getting really creative because all of a sudden they have some sort of a constraint and they have to work around what they usually do, and people are starting to deliberately make mistakes, and that is very funny.
Look at iDoc Mark. He did one of his little measuring tools with two oranges in them. That's good. Here's some kids with the orange stuff.
That is Orbital's photo, yeah.
Yeah, Laura Wick did one where she put orange glitter all over herself. There's some really neat stuff. So you could participate in this. It's very simple. Just take a picture, put in the tags on the picture, put orange eyes, no pumpkin. And then submit it to the Tech Guy Group. It's free to do all of that at Flickr.com. There is no, oh, I love that, Felix Boo, a kitty cat with orange eyes. There's no, prize. It's not really a contest. It's just a chance for you, an excuse for you to get out there and take some pictures. That's what we like about it. Chris is at ChrisMarquardt.com. What do you want to talk about today, Chris?
Well, it's Halloween, and the mood is kind of a spooky mood, and people are on Halloween parties, and they want to shoot. You know how if you use flash in a low light situation, you kind of kill the mood in the picture, especially on Halloween.
I hate that.
You get those flat faces, and everything is kind of washed out, and people don't want that. So I wanted to bring you just back to the basics, some easy ways to stabilize your photography, to make your pictures even with a low light thing where camera has to do a long exposure, to keep your pictures kind of camera shake free. And there are a few tricks that you can use.
I'd love to know this because I hate flash. I really hate flash.
So first of all, are you aware that if you have a DSLR, and a lot of new DSLR users don't know that, if you have a DSLR, that actually the weight of the DSLR is supposed to rest on your left hand.
Wait a minute. Let me think that again. Okay. Now I'm a lefty, so it'd be right hand for me, right?
No, because the DSLR has this big grip on the right-hand side, so you would hold that
still
on
have
this
to hold
grip.
It the same way, yeah.
And
yeah.
That kind of suggests to hold the weight of the camera there, but that is actually counterproductive when you want more stable pictures. What you do is you take your left hand in front of your chest, like very naturally in front of your chest, and then you flick it forward so the palm looks upward. That's what you put the camera into. So the camera sits on that hand. That's what holds all the weight of the camera.
And that'll make it steadier.
That'll make it much steadier. Now you take your left elbow and kind of squeeze it a bit against your rib cage.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You turn into your own tripod. And now what the right hand does, it only guides the camera and you can press it, but you can let go and the weight still sits on the left
hand. So that's the test. And you're holding the lens usually on in this case.
It's kind of half the camera is a bit on the hand and the lens is a bit on the hand.
The palm of my hand or the end of my hand that the camera's on and then the lens is resting, and so that's the test. If you can remove your right hand and the camera doesn't fall
remove
to the
right
ground,
hand and the camera doesn't it doesn't fall and it doesn't even move. So this way you can just imagine you holding the weight of the camera, and the DSLRs are heavy. You hold that with the right hand and you press the shutter. That is a recipe for disaster because
you're going to jiggle it.
Hold it. Yeah, you're going to jiggle it. Now, left hand holds it steady. Right hand doesn't really hold it. It's just guiding it. Press the shutter. That gives you more stable pictures. That's the first one.
That's good. I like that.
Don't forget the elbow in.
Elbow in against your body.
Photographers, a lot of photographers having both arms out with the elbows up in the air. That's not stable.
No, no. Elbows in. In fact, can you use your face to stabilize it a little bit too?
That is the next thing.
it's pressing eyebrow. Against my nose, but...
No, actually, the eyebrow, the contact with the eyebrow. If you don't wear glasses, that's a very good tip. Have the eyepiece contact your eyebrow. That is another point of stability.
Excellent. Excellent.
So when you're standing up doing photography, your stance is a very important factor. How your feet are on the ground. If you have your feet about hip width on the ground and both feet really on the ground, not just on tiptoes, but the full both feet flat on the ground, that will give you a lot of stability. And then like a chair, a third point adds stability. So if you lean against something, you're adding a third point of stability. So you basically turn into your own tripod.
Isn't the usual rule of thumb that you take the focal length of the lens, let's say it's a 50 millimeter lens, divide it in half. That's the slowest shutter speed you could use and reasonably be steady. So 1/25th. Is that the rule of thumb?
Kind of. So if you shoot at 100 millimeter focal length, the rule of thumb is to use 1/100 of a second or faster. If you shoot at 500 millimeters, you want 1/500 of a second or faster. It works. With this kind of, by holding the camera on the left hand,
you can get a little bit more.
Much more. Yeah. You can half the shutter speed. I get up to down to maybe 1/10 of a second.
Wow. Now, this isn't going to help if people are moving around in the picture.
Well, it'll at least stabilize you.
At least you won't be moving around.
There may be two blurry. Things that can move. There are two things that can move. You as the photographer can move the camera, and then people in the shot can move. So obviously, if people move around, they will still be blurry,
but
at least the rest would
If the background's steady and people are moving around, kind of that can be a nice effect.
If you want to emphasize that motion in the picture, that is exactly what you do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Did you know that the way you breathe has to do with your stability?
Well, I would imagine if you're breathing like this.
That's not so good. If you just came from a run, that might not be a good idea.
A lot of times when I'm taking pictures, I've just climbed a lot of stairs, walked a long way. I'm out of breath.
In general, if you're not out of breath, the breath still has an influence on how steady you are. A sniper, that's a very good analogy. A sniper breathes out while shooting, slowly breathes out. So if you take a breath in and then while slowly breathing out, you fire the shot, that will give you more stability.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then next thing is, how do you press the shutter? I see a lot of people who kind of slam the shutter, and that moves the camera, that jiggles the camera way too much. Best is to roll your finger over the shutter.
This is just like shooting again, like shooting a gun again. You breathe out just like a sniper would, and you squeeze just like you do when you're doing target practice. You never pull the trigger. You squeeze it.
Exactly. Do we have time for two more short ones?
Why not? I'm having fun. This is great. I want to know more.
If you hold a camera in portrait orientation, you have two choices. You can either have your hand on top, or you can have your hand on the bottom. Try on the bottom.
No, I always put it on top.
Yeah. You know why? Because that is just not stable. Because all of a sudden you have that weight of the camera on your right hand again.
Right. No, I want to have, the key is to support it with your left.
Support it with your left. You can really let go of the right hand. The camera sits on the left hand. And now all you do is you guide the camera with the right hand.
Yeah.
And you have a very...
I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
And last tip, be an archer.
Be an archer.
So you know how an archer fires an arch and waits until the arch hits the target until they move?
Wait a minute. They don't move till after the arrow hits the target.
They wait for the arrow to hit the target. They don't want to anticipate any motion because even the anticipation of motion will kind of make you not really hit the target. So the same is true for photography. If you shoot a picture and then already anticipate to take the camera off your eye and look at the display, that will add instability. If you imagine you were just shooting an arrow and wait for a second maybe for that to hit its virtual target, you will be more stable.
It's like when I bowl. as I after I send the bowling ball down the alley, I don't move. I don't shake my butt until after the strike.
That is exactly right. Okay. The same you do with photography, just that, well, you don't have that bowling ball, but you imagine one.
I will imagine a bowling ball shooting to the target. Great tips. You know, anything to avoid using a flash, seriously. And that's one reason why a lot of photographers, a couple of reasons, but a lot of photographers are moving to higher end digital SLRs because you can use faster lenses that make it possible to shoot without a flash. I love my very fast, you know, F50 1.2 lens. I take, well, tonight when I go out for Halloween, I'll be taking that.
Which is a heavy lens, and you want to support that with your left hand now.
Yep. I will now. I've learned my lesson. Chris Marquardt is a great photography teacher and a professional photographer to boot. You can find out more at his website, chrismarquardt.com. And do listen to his tips from the Top Floor podcast several times a week. It's a really useful show and always great to talk to you, Chris. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Leo.
Really appreciate it. We're going to take more of your calls in just a little bit. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. We have a few more minutes to go in the show. The website, techguylabs.com. And we'll put a link there to the Chris Marquardt's site. But we'll also put a link to our Flickr site and the contest there and the rules. Because if you go to FLICKR.com and then join the Tech Guy group, you'll see right in the front page of the group the instructions for our latest iron photographer assignment. Take a picture with the orange in it, with eyes in it, but no pumpkin, and try to break a rule of some kind. You know, having a flat horizon or, you know, perfect lighting or not jiggle. I mean, this would be one where you could jiggle the camera and see what happens. It's all about practicing, playing, having fun, but taking more pictures. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Back to the phones we go right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Mike Fullerton, what can I do for you today, sir?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Leo.
Thanks for calling, Mike. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, no problem. Last year, moved from DSL to cable internet. And, okay. I've got one of the boxes in a closet where all the punch down.
Right.
Cable comes in and all the phone and networking goes out.
Right.
So it wasn't a big deal. The cable guy, you know, comes out, he puts the box in that little junction box, and then I got a Cat 5, clipped it, punched it down to a network line that runs to where my computer is in a room, and went from there. I recently, because of new technology and so forth, if I've got my Dish network boxes hooked up, I got extra content. And since I've got some extra networking capability in the house, I was thinking maybe I'd be able to put a router in that is different from the setup I have now. So currently, the computer that's hooked up to the network line in the room is hooked up via a Linksys router, wireless router, that also gives me wireless in the house. But if I want to activate some of the other network connections that are in the house, I'm going to need to activate them before, you know, like kind of back in that junction box where the
right.
where the cable modem is.
Right.
I don't think I want to bury my wireless router that I currently use, the Linksys router, in there, because I think that'll be interference, and there's a lot of stuff
right.
there. So,
right.
I'm
right.
sure. But what should what would the best thing to do be if I have that kind of a box with the connections? What should I put in there in order to activate? I figured I'd need a router of some kind, but I wasn't sure if I could just use a switch or a hub or whatever.
Well, okay. So there's three different kind of primary kinds of network devices. There are routers, switches, and hubs. You kind of named all three of them.
Right.
Routers are used primarily to share internet, to route traffic. So you'll need a router somewhere on the network to assign internet addresses. Usually it's the first thing on the network.
Right. We're thinking, right.
But a switch can also precede a router. It's just that nothing on the other side of the switch will have DHCP, will have internet access via the router. So a switch is used to, switch is what really creates the network. It's used to, you can have managed or unmanaged switches. Managed switches are quite expensive. They're used to control traffic. Think of it as dividing parts of your house into segments, each on a different switch. So it reduces bandwidth needs. It kind of isolates parts of the network for security, privacy, and efficiency. And a managed switch is going to do the best job of that. But most of the time, these unmanaged switches are adequate to that. And a hub is just a passive device that allows you to plug multiple Ethernet connectors into one outlet. Basically, it's like an extension cord.
Yeah, and the room that I've got the computer in, I've also got the dish DVR and the computer. So I was using the wireless router.
I would suggest the best thing to do is to make a map, like draw a map. You could use Visio or OmniGraffle on the Mac, or there are a lot of different mind mapping products. And map this out before you even lay wire number one. You want to put the router in front of any device that needs to have internet access. That's what they're going to log into. You're going to put the switches where you want to isolate stuff. So maybe switches are generally only used with larger networks to kind of reduce collisions and to improve the efficiency and privacy of the network. And of course, a switch works just like a hub. A switch usually has, 8, maybe 16, sometimes 32. I think we have some 32 port switches here. Truth is, this is why people use Wi-Fi, so they don't have to do all of this stuff. Make a map. There's some great sites for this kind of information. I would say practicallynetworked.com is the first place I'd go for tutorials and all of this stuff. It can get very complicated very quickly. It's funny. This is the kind of stuff a pro, would hire somebody to do. And nowadays, we're all kind of becoming network professionals. Good luck on that one. Hey, one other thing to keep in mind, backup, and of course, when you have multiple seats, if you're a business, for instance, you might want to look at Carbonite Pro for business. Carbonite Pro is, combines the benefits of Carbonite, which is internet backup, remote, internet backup, so that you always have a copy of your data automatically. But it also adds this to a business where you have multiple users. In fact, the nice thing about Carbonite Pro, you don't pay per user. You just pay for the storage you need. And you have a centralized dashboard that says these are backed up, these aren't. What's the status? You can restore. Even locally, you can restore. A user can say, I threw out that PowerPoint. Can I get it back? And they can do it themselves. Of course, that's one of the benefits of Carbonite and Carbonite Pro. You can log into your Carbonite Pro account, see your files right there. Even use an iPhone or a BlackBerry app. They're free. I want you to try Carbonite Pro for 30 days. It really is a great backup solution for small business. Free for 30 days. You can see how it applies, how it works. Very affordable, too. It starts at $10 a month, which is a great price for backup. CarbonitePro.com. Try it free for 1 month and let me know what you think. CarbonitePro.com. I think we got time for one more caller. Elena in Florida. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Elena.
Hi, Leo. I hear you every Sunday.
Thank you.
I use it Skype. I download Skype. I use it 1 year to straight talk to my family in Bulgaria.
Wonderful.
My computer crashed. I bring it to the technician in the St. Petersburg after I take it at home, and I start to use the Skype. The Skype every time come to me, my computer, in different language. Some language Afghanistan, some language...
You're kidding. Every time it's a different one?
Absolutely.
Well, that is scary.
Hear me? And I use it a recovery disk for my pictures and my family, my music from my country. And after this, I restarted factory files, all of them clean it. And now I'm scared to download Skype because I do it this for second time. I again start to Arabic language. or Afghanistan or Czechoslovak.
Elena, I have no idea what's going on, but I would suggest going to your control panel and look in the regional control panel and make sure you're set for U.S. I think that would help Skype. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're out of time. Have a great Geek Week.